Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 25, 2019. Rebel leader General Thomas Cirilo says the government should stop attacking his troops.
The government is shelling all the villages and our people are running in the bushes. Our people, some of them are crossing the border to Congo. And though we really work very hard, we are using every means to defend ourselves.
And Sudan's president declares a state of emergency as protests continue on the streets of Khartoum.
There is no parliament, there is no cabinet. He had all the powers in his hands. He could order the army to be on the streets, the tanks, any unit of the army, the security forces have free hand to arrest people, to detain them, to get in their homes.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The leader of the National Salvation Front, General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, says the international community should blame the government of South Sudan for attacking his forces. He says his group will fight the Sudan People's Defense Forces who are combing villages in Yei River State. He says his troops are fighting in what he calls self-defense.
What is happening in Yei and other places of South Sudan is that South Sudan government forces under Salva Kiir is the one now attacking the forces of National Salvation Front and South Sudan National Democratic Alliance forces. And you have been warning people throughout these few weeks ago that the government in Juba is preparing their forces, moving their forces from Juba to the road of going to Western Equatoria in Rokon and other areas, also moving their forces towards Lobonok, towards Tori, towards Yei. They're preparing to attack us. Yeah, so we have been warning the people and informing the international community, the IGAD and JAMIC, and citizens. Nobody was giving any comment or saying anything about this until the forces of the government started to attack us. Now we are under attack for almost 2 weeks. And we continue to send our statements about our attacks.
And why is the government attacking you in particular? I mean, there are other forces in South Sudan. Why is the government attacking you?
The government attacking us because the other forces, of course, they decided to go in, to go to Juba under this access agreement, revitalized agreement. But National Salvation Front and other forces of South Sudan National Democratic Alliance, we refused to sign this agreement because this agreement gave everything to Salva Kiir. This agreement rewarded Salva Kiir for what they have been doing in South Sudan. This agreement will continue to make South Sudanese to be like slaves in their own country. This is why National Salvation Front and other forces of South Sudan National Democratic Alliance refused to sign this agreement because we think this agreement is not fair, and therefore we are asking international community and IGAD to help the people of South Sudan for us to agree on what is good for our people.
Why is Thomas not part of this peace deal? I mean, you decided to pull out and you're blaming the government for the agreement for giving the government all the powers. You pulled out of the agreement.
We are just forced to sign this agreement. And many people who signed that agreement, they did not sign this agreement from their hearts. To be true to you, people are coerced to sign this agreement. And this is why you are saying this agreement is not for the people of South Sudan. This agreement might be for the interests of other people. But we are saying that we want the reasons why the South Sudanese are fighting among themselves to be resolved first, so that we can reconcile, so that we can go home, so that we can start now to build our country. So this agreement is not fair. This agreement did not resolve the root cause of this conflict in Sudan. And therefore, we believe in law, it really brings sustainable peace to South Sudan.
Now, you're making an interesting point here that the parties were coerced or forced to sign the agreement. Who forced them?
Many partners, the mediators, coerced people, including myself before I left Khartoum. People were coerced to sign the agreement. You are coerced from the first day on something that we did not even see. Nobody consulted us. and we are told to sign an agreement, and we refused to sign that. This is why we left Sudan, and we came out from Sudan, and we continue to ask that. We want something that the South Sudanese should agree among themselves. We have to be asked why we fight, first of all, in the first place, against ourselves.
President Salva Kiir met leaders from Jubek State in Juba, and his message to the leaders from Jubek State was that they should talk to you to come back to Juba. How do you react to that?
I got this in the media, but I think National Salvation Front is not a tribal organization. National Salvation Front is not a regional organization. We are a national organization. We are struggling for the people of South Sudan to be free from the oppression, from all that what is happening in South Sudan. So we are not a tribal organization. And therefore, the issues that we are raising, these are national issues, are not tribal issues.
And talk to us a little bit about the reality on the ground in Yei River State. I mean, you say that your forces are being attacked on the road to Western Equatoria. Are there any reports of casualties? It's not easy to get these kind of reports from the areas where fighting is taking place. What are your commanders telling you?
Of course, we are under attacks, and we are sustaining, of course, casualties. And especially, if you remember recently, especially around here, the government is shelling all the villages, and our people are running in the bushes. Our people, some of them are crossing the border to Congo. And though we really worked very hard, we really did everything to defend our people and to defend ourselves. But our government, of course, they are now massing a lot of forces in the area, and that made our people really to suffer. But of course, we are using every means to defend ourselves, including some of our special units that are using bows and arrows now to defend ourselves. And I think that defending ourselves is a right for us to defend ourselves. So we are saying all the time, we are abiding with cessation of hostilities and let the government stop their attacks against us. We don't want the government to force us to something that is against the people of South Sudan. And this campaign now is a campaign to force the people of South Sudan to accept the rule of Salva Kiir and the Council of Elders in the country.
If you were given an opportunity to explain to the people of South Sudan, what is it that you are not happy with in this agreement, the revitalized peace agreement?
We had wanted the presidency to be collegial, to be rotational, and the decision at the presidency should be by consensus so that we are sure that the interim period is really secured. Number two, we demanded federalism. We think that federalism is the best system of governance for the people of South Sudan, given the geographical and ethnic diversity in South Sudan. We think that is best for us, so that also we devolve the power to the people of South Sudan. We want to empower them so that they're able to develop themselves and take care of their affairs. This is what we are saying, and therefore we are demanding federalism to be the system of governance in South Sudan. The second issue is the parliament is being... is controlled by SPLM rule system in South Sudan. We want the parliament really not to be controlled by anybody, so that we are assured that nobody is not going to shoot down or is not going to sabotage any transformation programs in South Sudan. We demanded for 10 states because 32 states has caused a lot of problems to the people of the community. Land is taken and annexed to other communities, which is now causing a lot of problems. And our communities are now fighting among themselves. This is why we are saying, let us revert back to the 10 states. And after the elections, after the interim period, now let the people of South Sudan decide what they want, because 32 states now met the people of South Sudan to fight each other. And we have legal basis for 10 states. It was there in the... It was there in the interim constitution. It was there during the in the agreement between Riek Machar and Salva Kiir in 2015. Also, it was also endorsed by the Council of Ministers of IGAD. And therefore, there is no need for us to go for 32 states, which was agreed by Salva Kiir and caused a lot of problems in the country.
That's General Thomas Cirilo Suaka, leader of the National Salvation Front, speaking to me this past hour from an undisclosed location in Addis Ababa via WhatsApp. President Omar al-Bashir's three-day-old state of emergency has done little to quell the rise of protest in Sudan. Over the weekend, protesters took to the streets, even as Bashir swore in a new prime minister after dissolving his cabinet on Friday. Omar Ismail is with the Washington-based Enough Project. He says the state of emergency in Sudan will give Bashir unilateral powers, but will do little to crack down on protesters.
the demonstrations and the movement in the streets of Khartoum and the different cities around the country is now reaching a point where he really felt the heat and is threatening the government. And to stop this, he is declaring the state of emergency.
In the context of Sudan, what does a national emergency mean?
The national emergency means that now he is running the country through martial law. There is no parliament, there is no cabinet. He had all the powers in his hands. He could order the army to be on the streets, the tanks, any unit of the army, the security forces have free hand to arrest people, to detain them, to get in their homes, to stop and search anybody at any given day, time of the day. This is basically imposition of martial law, as it's known through history by dictators who feel that their presence in power is threatened.
So then what is the message that President al-Bashir is trying to send by dissolving the local and national government?
He was just trying to say that I'm justifying the declaration of emergency, because if he came in and he stood there, the whole speech was 18 minutes. I was timing it. And in that, he was saying almost nothing. He was saying things like, I will stand an equal distance between all the parties. What does that mean? It is vague. He didn't say that he is not going to run for in 2020, but he said, I instructed the parliament to postpone the discussion on the amendments of the laws that were put before parliament. He did not even mention what these laws are. Ostensibly, that means that the discussion about the amendments of the laws for him to run in 2020 will be put on hold. But he never said, I'm not going to run in 2020. Most of what he said is vague, is not even coherent. In certain times, he's talking about a zero-sum game or a zero-sum equation. He mentioned that a few times. But all this was to justify the declaration of the state of emergency.
That was Omar Ismail, senior advisor at the Washington-based Enough Project. He was speaking to my colleague Ayen Deng Bior from Washington. Some South Sudanese politicians, formerly allied to first Vice President Taban Deng Gai, are calling for his removal from the government before the end of the pre-transitional period. Dozens of lawmakers and other officials accuse the first Vice President of what they call mismanagement of state funds in implementing the August 2015 agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. But Guy's press secretary says the first vice president should be allowed to serve until a new transitional government of national unity is formed. Onen Walter Solomon has more for VOA from Juba.
75 members of the SPLM-IO Interim Governing Council in the Transitional Government of National Unity signed a petition calling for Taban Deng Gai's dismissal as first vice president. Otim David Okot, the Secretary General of the SPLM-IO Interim Governing Council in the Transitional Government, read the petition at today's press conference in Juba.
Since the nomination and installation as FVP in July 27, 2016, the SPLM-IO in Tigono has witnessed a relentless abuse of power and public office, unreasonable and irrational decision-making, fiscal mismanagement and greed, squandering of financial resources of the state in the name of implementation of ASIS 2015, and debilitating decline in party's members' trust and confidence in General Taban as FVP and leader.
Okot says the first vice president's actions also caused divisions among the forces loyal to the group and led to an increase in human rights abuses across the country. The group accuses Gai of prematurely and unilaterally dissolving the entire structures of the SPLM-IO faction he laid without consulting with party's leaders.
The misguided actions of the FVP to dissolve the SPLM-IO without following procedure and without consulting party leaders was not just a mere travesty of justice to party members, but a recipe for political chaos as it plunged the party and its military wing into deep crisis, thereby encouraging the IO forces to either join other opposition forces or to hold out without command and control, leading to criminality and human rights violations.
Okot says Guy failed to deliver on the promises the SPLM-IO Guy faction made when the group appointed him to replace Riek Machar as first vice president when the former rebel leader fled Juba in July 2016.
Some of these commitments were this: to mobilize the SPLM-IO fraternity to implement the ASIS 2015, unite, reconcile, and heal the country from further violence and carnage. Two, to reach out to internally displaced persons in the POCs and refugees in the neighboring countries to return home. To order all our holdout forces to return to the designated cantonment centers for immediate assembly and reintegration.
Okot says his group wants Lieutenant General Gatkwoth Othnyang to replace Guy. But Agail Machara, the first vice president's press secretary, says the people calling for Guy's removal do not understand what they are talking about.
Their claims are too wild and preposterous, and they are out of touch with realities, whether it is with the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan or with the revitalized agreement on the conflict of the Republic of South Sudan. The removal of the first vice president is not the work of anybody. He was brought by the top leadership of the SPLM-IO to replace Dr. Riek Machar after the incidents of the 2016 July in J1.
Machar says the agreement is clear that Guy must finish his term until the revised peace deal is in place. Okot says his group welcomes efforts by President Salva Kiir to try to reunify the various SPLM factions. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese women want security laws change to reflect the country's revised peace deal. That story is coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what kinds of infrastructure improvements are the biggest priority in your community?
I would like my roads to be improved because we are not comfortable with the roads.
I think it is hospital. It's hospital because I'm seeing people suffering with their kids, even mothers, they are suffering when they are pregnant.
Park where children can play and where adults can also meet to hang out will be a big improvement.
For the government to do the street so that when people are driving, their cars cannot be bumping and all over, and the gutters as well. The gutters are full of rubbish and then it's choke as well. If they can clear the dirty things out, it will be perfect.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
The National Constitutional Amendment Committee, the body tasked with reviewing South Sudan's laws during the pre-transitional period, says it's making progress in reforming some of South Sudan's more controversial laws. A representative for the committee says she wants punitive measures taken against security forces found guilty of rape and sexual assault. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Gichira Kibara, chairperson of the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, says the body is discussing five security laws, including the National Security Act of 2014, the SPLM Act of 2009, the Police Service Act of 2009, and the Prisons Act of 2011.
Issues about accountability of the services to the public, issues about providing for human rights, issues of about providing for the women, inclusion of women. These are some of the issues we are looking at. Also ensuring that, like for the police and the prisons, they begin becoming conventional services rather than military, because right now they behave as if they are part of the military, which is not proper in a democratic country.
Kibara says the body reviewed the constitutional amendment bill and turned it over to Justice Minister Paulino Wana Awela Onango in January. The SPLM-IO opposed the committee's decision to send the bill to the Justice Minister because the opposition does not have as many members as the ruling party in the cabinet and the legislature.
I think their main fear is that the Council of Ministers is dominated by the government, and also the Transitional Legislative Assembly is dominated by government. So they were saying that the bill should be presented to Council of Ministers and also to the National Assembly after the new government has been formed. But reading the agreement, the majority of the members of the NCAC believe that the reference to Artigon was an error, a typographical error.
Kibara says the NCAC will be able to complete its work before the pre-transitional government is due to expire. Once the security law amendments are completed, the NCAC will begin to work on the Political Parties Act, something Kibara says will be completed before the end of March. Jacqueline Nasiwa, a member of the NCAC Justice Working Group and a representative to the Constitutional Amendment Committee, says she wants the laws to include affirmative action language so that women are appointed to high-ranking positions in the security sector.
This should be a deliberate recruitment. We know that the agreement says there will be no recruitment during the transitional period, but if the 35% which is granted to women is not met, are the parties just going to fold their hands because the agreement says no? We have examples from the region and beyond. Like in Liberia, there was deliberate kind of action taken to make sure like women are recruited in the forces.
Nasiwa says having women in higher security ranks and having legal remedial actions in the security sector laws would help hold perpetrators of sexual abuses accountable.
All these security laws, they have gaps in terms of women's participation, much as the law also recognizes like gender, saying like all South Sudanese men and women, which is great. But there needs to be some efforts to ensure that women are part and partial of these forces.
Nasiwa says there should be some separate detention cells for women as well as training centers, which would encourage more women to join the security forces. Vice President James Wani Iga, who opened the two-day security laws amendment meeting in Juba, says that is a reason why gender-based violence keeps happening in South Sudan.
The laws have not been strong enough. Then we'll have to strengthen these laws. Or possibly the enforcement, rather the implementation. And so that will be need as you pass this, security organs laws, to also put a mechanism in which our security organs concerned with enforcement of laws really implement this vigorously and to the spirit and letter.
The meeting brought together members of representatives from all security organizations, parties to the peace deal, ANMIS, civil society groups, youth and faith-based group, and the business community. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns the erosion of human rights around the world is threatening peace and security and putting restraints on people's right to development. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva, where the Secretary General has opened the 40th regular session of the Human Rights Council.
United Nations Chief Antonio Guterres says the human rights agenda is losing ground in many parts of the world, with negative consequences for social justice and people's ability to improve their lives. Among the troubling trends he sees is what he calls the shrinking civic space in every region of the globe and every corner of the internet.
Activists and journalists are being targeted by surveillance, misinformation campaigns, and threats of violence that too often result in actual violence. Big data and facial recognition technology are being misused for undue surveillance and interference with free speech, causing a chilling effect and a shrinking space for dialogue.
Guterres says he is alarmed by rising anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hatred. He says hate speech is a menace to democratic values, social stability, and peace. He warns vicious, disparaging, verbal attacks are moving into the mainstream, infecting liberal democracies and authoritarian systems alike.
Some major political parties and leaders are cutting and pasting ideas from the fringes into their own propaganda and electoral campaigns. And parties, once rightly considered pariahs, are gaining influence over governments. And with each broken norm, the pillars of humanity are weakened.
Over the coming 4 weeks, the 47-member Human Rights Council will explore many of the issues the UN chief has raised. It will examine the human rights records of countries, including Syria, Myanmar, Burundi, South Sudan, Iran, and North Korea. It also will deal with thematic issues such as torture, disappearances, terrorism, and freedom of religion. The United States quit the council last year, calling it a politically biased body and a protector of human rights abusers. It can still participate as an observer during the current session. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Morina Opidri by Lance and Lee.
The new generation man, Hopi Ekwenidi, Karudu Waiyai, Hopi Ekwemanini, leave out the studios.
Morina Opidri Mesuarayo,
Yeni Mare Kobane.
Morina Opidri Mesuarayo,
Ahi Mare Kobane.
Morina Opidri Muturu Kwake,
Yeni Mare Kobane.
Atani Volo Matila Kwani Rasa,
Hopi Mare Kobane. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Hopi Madini.
been listening to Lansan Lee with the song Morina Opidri. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yes.